are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covetousness for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Preparations are concealed, not public. States are buried, not headlined. Percentages are silent, not praised.
Billions of people just living out their lives, oblivious. Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
I drink your milkshake. I drink it up.
Thank you, John Larson. I receive your kind words on behalf of all of our courageous members of the House of Representatives who want the best for the American people. And what we can do that is best for them in the next 24 hours is to pass affordable, accessible health care for all Americans. The best for all Americans is to have 32 million more people to have health insurance in our country.
Oh.
The best for...
Piece of stinking filth.
Shh, you're saving a shop. This is AJ of the InfoWars. Listen to the Shaliak. This is Alex Jones of InfoWars. Listen to Shaliak on the Cold Reality News and Report.
This is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Well, hello there!
Well, look, folks. You're on the Cold Reality Report. This is Clint Richardson. I'm filling in for Shaliak today. Sort of a last-minute deal, but I thought I would just rip in with a bang today and talk about something that I think confuses a lot of people. Now, there are, of course, let me just cover a few things before we get started, because there's various aspects of the what we call the truth movement, the patriot movement, whatever word that you actually use. And of course, truth is a word that is susceptible to lies, so lies can actually be confirmed as truths. That's actually how the government got started. A fiction that gets confirmed as a truism. That is how we actually are voluntarily part of our citizenship. We confirm and ratify the citizenship, the contractual relationship, even though we don't realize we're doing it. We start signing up for selective service, start using the signature, which is a combination of the Christian name and the surname, which belongs to the state, and so you're mixing the nature in with the... the nature in with the fiction, with the artificial. Remember, the art always represents the real, not the truth, but the real. And so it's an interesting thing when you start picking apart the words that describe these things. What is a patriot? Well, it's two words. It's pat riot. To be a pat riot means that you are very angry and very usable. You're very emotional. You let your emotion get in the way of your logic and your reason, which is the only place you should be when you're talking about the law. So anybody who's talking about the Bundy Ranch or any of these public lands things and contracts and permits and all these things should be very aware that their emotion is getting in the way of them having any kind of discourse on the actual legal aspect. And that's what I'm here to talk to you about today. Unemotional, just the way it is. You know, this is one of the things that I, you know, finally figured out is that I just have to accept that this is not my system. I'm not a party to it. I am a public citizenship, a set on an adventure in a sea of commerce, and on my ship I do the law. What according I do according to what the law tells my ship it can do. It's not so much that the law is telling me what I can do. It's telling me what I can do on my ship, on my public citizenship. Now, that's hard for people to accept. Again, I have to say we have to admit a little bit of defeat before we can move forward, I think. We have to admit that we're slaves before we can ever be free. It's one of those things. And of course, you have to learn the language of your masters in order to ever be free of that which binds you in the surety kind of contractual situation that we are in. And so we have this debate going on. Again, Pat Riot. Think about that, folks. If you're a Pat Riot, what is a riot? A riot is opposition. What does Pat mean? To be Pat, to be stay put, to be kept down or controlled. So what is a patriot? Well, patriot is basically someone suffering from Stockholm syndrome, someone who loves their country, even though they really don't know what their country actually is, a municipal corporation. They love it, absolutely love it, and so they're controlled opposition. Literally, Pat Riot, control of what would otherwise be a bloody revolution, right? No, so there's your patriot, defined. What is your signature? Well, sig's an old Saxon word. It means victory. We know what nature is. What is signature? Victory over nature. Again, you're assigning a legal fiction name with your good Christian name, and there you go. You've just tainted your blood, so to speak. You've figuratively agreed to a contract that takes you out of the private realm and puts you into a public persona, public person. What is a person? Well, to act in person. Now, keep in mind, the Maximum Law is very clear. It says that all persons are men, but not all men are persons. Again, all persons are men, but not all men are persons. Well, that's the difference between being a private and a public man. One who is private does not assign their good name to a state or other form of surname, attachment, an addition, an admixture of names. One does not do that. These are the people who control the other people who do take upon themselves an adventure, a commercial ship, if you will, citizenship. And so it's very difficult for us to really, you know, put ourselves. It's first of all, it's difficult to find what your status is, because this is not information. It's not secret information. It's not hidden. You have to do a hell of a lot of research to actually find it and figure it out. But when you're a person, again, two words, you're acting per the sun. Well, what does that mean? It means you have a father that is not of your blood. Who's the father of your person? It's not your mother. It's not your actual father. No. When we use the word father, we're talking about God. Well, who's the father of your person? Well, the United States. Who was the father of the United States? Oh. Yeah, we call them the founding fathers or the founding gods. See, God is a very loose term. God simply means magistrate, means judge, means president, means king, it means pope, it means all sorts of different, means mayor, means judge. It's really a loose term, and it's used in the Bible that way, but you have to go and you have to look at each instance where the word God is used, and you'll see that here it means Jehovah, which is the highest supreme God of the universe, which is a verb, not a noun. And then every other time you see it, which is most of the time, you'll see it's the landlords, the people who are charging you rent, the people who have given you this registration, the Caesars. Now, the word for Caesar is seizure. Another word for that is district. District means distraint and distress. So you're in a distraint the second you're burst into this country. Now, this is hard. This is all hard information. Very difficult to accept. But again, your signature and your actions actually expressly confirm and express the voluntary consent to personhood. Every time you use your signature, your victory over nature. Every time you apply for Social Security, use those benefits, unemployment, every time you use a driver's license, every time that you're invoking the name, especially through signature, then you are strengthening the case against you more and more. You are a public, you're acting as a public person, an agency, to your principal, which is the United States. Now, this is, again, very difficult to finally come to the conclusion of the unemotional fact of the case, that we're basically, when you say that you're an agent of a principal, you're saying you're under the doctrine of master and servant. The doctrine of master and servant is another word for volunteerism. If you look up volunteerism, it'll tell you it's part of the doctrine of master and servant. It's not what you think out here in emotion land, out here in the common language of the vulgar, of love and all that. No, no, no. There's no love. There's no emotion in the legal fiction. You can't attach reality. You can't attach emotion. You can't attach nature to anything legal. And that's what we're talking about when we're talking about public lands. Now, what is a public land? I mean, it makes you think, well, it's public, and therefore all the public owns the land. No, 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 no. Come on, folks. What is the public? Do you think that being public gives you any authority over any land? So if you're public, then you're merely a citizen of the foreign United States. You're not part of any of the states. And therefore, any lands that are quote-unquote public in any of the 50 independent or several means private, states, well, then guess what, man? You have no privy to that land. Privy is privilege. We have rights and we have privileges. Public people, private persons get rights. Private people have privileges and immunities and protections. But we, over here in the public land, we only have rights. You see, that's the big difference. There's no rights in nature, folks. Rights don't grow on trees. You have no rights, period, end of story. What we call our God-given rights or our unalienable rights are those which we may utilize in what's called a negative situation, a negative law, which is that constant droning you hear from the anarchist crowd and the natural law crowd of do no harm, which is actually the satanic version of the Bible, or the actual natural law, which we say is the law of God, etc., etc., etc. And so, you know, I'm sitting here watching this whole fiasco at the Bundy Ranch and all that, the federal takeover. I'm watching it distantly because, you know, You're either of the opinion out here in the truth movement or the patriot movement, the controlled opposition movement, that, well, it's either a psyop, which is more my opinion, or it's just a bunch of useful idiots, which Lenin actually titled Useful Innocents back in the day when the Americans were supporting communism even as they were killing in the Holodomor and back in 1917, etc., and back in the Russian Revolution, the Red Army, when they were raping all the women and killing all the men and, you know, all that good stuff in tens of millions, the real Holocaust, if you will. That's, you know, people were supporting communism in America. And so Lenin was like, yeah, great, wonderful, look at these useful idiots, useful innocents. And so we sort of support our own voluntary servitude. This leads us into what exactly, again, understanding that each state out there, each state government is foreign to the other. That includes the United States, which is also called and defined as a state or the state. So, if we are all United States citizens, that simply means we are foreigners in the states in which we reside, our domicile. We're dominated in our domicile. In the United States, our person allows us and gives us access to live in the states and partake in the benefits of those states through licensure. Remember, license. You don't need a license with half the things that are licensed. License just means permission to do what is illegal, legally. Doesn't make the act, doesn't make whatever thing you're doing any less illegal. It just gives you a temporary permission to do something that is illegal. This is why I'm on people all the time about the notion of legalization. I know everybody wants to legalize marijuana, but hey, guess what? That means that marijuana is illegal. Don't be confused with terms. That means marijuana is illegal. Makes it much more easy to confiscate, to control when you make it legal. Decriminalization, whole different thing. A rose is a rose, and by under any other name, it's a rose. But marijuana, which is not even the correct term, cannabis sativa or cannabis whatever, can't think of it right now. Those are the actual terms. Marijuana is a junk term from Mexico. And they'll use that. They'll use that against anybody who doesn't know the difference. And see, this is a problem. You see, it's all about words. It's just like arms versus firearms. Marijuana versus cannabis sativa. When you register your arms, they become firearms. They therefore become a legal person of the gun, a personification, a fiction of the gun. It's a legal arms now. It's legal firearms. What is a firearm? It's not a gun. Firearms, like a cannon, something that's that explodes. Yeah, you see, the problem is not that you have guns. The problem is not that they're going to confiscate guns. The problem is you're registering your guns as a public idiot, public-controlled opposition, and therefore the registered thing can always be confiscated because guess what? It's registered in your person. Remember, not all men are persons, but all persons represent men. Okay. When you read the law, you see all the time the difference between man's person and man. You see human, which is not man. It's the form and shape of man without the substance. You see the word animal used. Animals, man, and other animals used in U.S. code a lot. Well, guess what, folks? That's a very specific word that has a very specific meaning. It's a Latin term, actually. Anima means soul. You put an A-L at the end of any word, or most words, depending on the word, well, unfortunately, that takes away whatever the word is. So if anima is soul, and animal is, less than a soul, well, then you have soulless. And if you understand the law, and you understand how blood plays into the law, and in law of inheritance and all that stuff, well, then you understand that simply means goyim, the people of the nation, the people whose father is the nation. That's us, folks. See, we've been conned, we've been tricked, we've been pirated into essentially handing over our children over as wards of the state, as apprentices, basically, to the state, which is Washington, D.C., the district to Caesar, in other words. And therefore, our blood is tainted. We have no inheritance rights. We're only visitors, temporary residents in every state that we live in. Our actual home, our domicile, our dwelling house is actually the District of Columbia, because that's where all persons that are public live. They cannot live anywhere else. They're part of that country, but they can reside, which is a temporary residency. There's another word, reside. What is residence? Well, if you're claiming, this is interesting, or you're claiming to be anything that has the word res in it, I hate to tell you this, but res means thing, as in, you know, person, place, or thing. Well, a resident is, again, it's not a man, it's a thing. Any word with res in it, resident, is always going to be a thing, and whatever the word is going to describe what that thing is doing. So when we're residing in a state, we are foreigners in that state. We are there by license. We're agents, registered agents for service of process. We have a principal, which is our United States district. Therefore, we're under the United States law, as opposed to the private states, which are not under United States law. But all the things that we do as we're foreigners, and if we were foreigners in another country, we'd also be bound by United States law We'd have to be extradited to the United States. So same thing, being in a foreign country or a foreign state, not much different. And so we're all here basically as invited guests. They're happy to have us because we're the same old indentured slaves we always have been. And this is the hard part, because then you go to the Bundy Ranch. And you got a bunch of Pat riots, a bunch of basically either controlled opposition in the way that is paid and there to make a public confusion, or the useful idiot kind. And either way, it's disgusting to me that we fall for this. The other aspect of this is, again, very difficult. Now, I want you to think of the private people, including the founding fathers. You got to think of them as a king. Another word for king is sovereignty, or sovereignty ship, if you will. When we say the word king is not defined as a single individual, although it can be and is. The word king or kingship can also be a people, a private people, and that is what we have in each of the several states, and they get together in a compact to protect each other, and in a compact to promote slavery, in a compact to protect slavery, and a compact to promote commerce, essentially, which was the United States. That's all the United States is. It was just the central commercial hub of the West. Not real shocking there. And they created the law of the land. Well, see, the problem is, when we look at the law of the land, what does law of the land mean? You say it all the time, probably. You think it's all patriotic and wonderful to say. It sounds good. It sounds sweet. It sounds, heroic. You know, it sounds, wow, the trumpets blow, law of the land. Well, all it means is due process of law. That's all it means. It doesn't mean anything special. What is due process of law? That's what the courts put forward as law, as their interpretation of the law and how it applies to each individual case. What's law of the land? Due process of law. Don't forget that. Every time you say that, you should cringe, because due process of law is only up to the attorneys, to the Bar Association. That's not a good thing, folks. And what other thing about that aspect? What is the law of the land? Well, do we ever ask what the land is? Because there's no land. There's no soil, there's no actual nature in the fucking, in the actual legal realm. It's all artificial, it's fictional, it's on paper. You get that? There's no land. So what is the land? Well, land is defined as anything movable or immovable in real estate. Do you think the word real in real estate means anything real? No, it means paper. It means title, and you either have the perfect title or you have the defective title. Public persons have a defective title because public persons have no blood to inherit. We don't claim our father as our actual father. We claim our father. We bear the arms of the state. We bear the arms of the United States. We don't fly our arms, our fabled genealogy. We don't actually have any idea what the Second Amendment means either, because it's talking about not weapons, it's talking about your heraldry. That's why these private people say private, because they haven't tainted their blood. They're not in attainder. You see, it gets very convoluted, it gets very complicated when you actually start learning these terms. When you actually start figuring out how their scam works, how their pirate cove actually operates, and how it's totally screwed you through S-cheat and other types of methods, stolen your lands, stolen your blood right, made you public instead of private through the birth process so that you never even know it happened, give you a public education, make you public-minded, give you public access TV. It's ridiculous. So what is the law of the land, and who's under the law of the land? Well, the private people aren't under the law of the land. They're not land. You're land. Well, not you. You're a person. You're movable. You're just land. Land doesn't mean what you think it does in legal. Remember, land is what is movable and immovable. What's immovable? Well, buildings. Buildings can't really move off the land, although nowadays we do some pretty interesting things. But the point is, it's considered an immovable land. It's part of the land. It's adjudicated as part of the land. Law of the land, right? Means it's a judicial process again. So what's immovable? If a building or a fence or whatever is immovable, water is another one. What's movable land? Well, how about cattle or chattel? You think you're anything but movable land? You think that your person in a municipal corporation, not your own, in some city, in some imperfect title, on some land, or some ranch, some farm, you think that you're not just part of the land, that you're just there as a renter? See, this is again, this is how confused we are. Let me give you a little more information here, but I find this to be funny. Now, what are the Bundys? They're farmers, right? You ever wonder why if you guys have never looked at the Farm Bill, it's a very important bill, and in general, it didn't have very much to do with farming. That is, the type of farming that we consider as farming in the vulgar tongue. When I say farm, I'm going to go farm. What do you think? You think, well, let's see, I'm gonna go plant some vegetables and pull them out in the spring, maybe the summer, maybe the winter, depending on what, we don't even know about winter gardening. It's been taken from us so that we're dependent on the cycles that they've presented. Heck, winter garden, you can grow almost anything in the winter. But we're not supposed to know that. Yeah, you're supposed to have two cycles. Not just one, not just wait for the next spring, the next harvest. No. There's a whole, you should look it up, whole thing on winter gardening. Most of the seeds in winter gardening have, of course, been sucked out of the system, made completely unaware to the people and put in these big seed vaults. You can still get them. The point I'm trying to make, though, is again, here's a word that we don't understand. What the heck was the Farm Bill? Well, Bundy Ranch, bunch of farmers. Colony is another word for plantation or farm. Colony means farm. The word farm has one specific meaning. It means rent. You're a farmer? Well, you're a renter. You exist by tenure or by rent, or what used to be called provision. It still is called provision. The reason they called rent provision is because, of course, they used to pay their taxes in corn or wheat or chickens or whatever it was. So they gave provisions in the place of rent. If you were a farmer in the old aristocratic systems, you were paying rent. If you were a soldier, you were paying rent, and you bought your own armor in the aristocratic systems, in the old feudal systems. We still have the feudal system going on, is the point I'm trying to make. We just call it by different names. It's more trickery now. At least back then, the slaves knew they were slaves. At least back then, the renters knew they were renters. But today, we have no frickin' clue what the hell we are. We're under a feudal system called by a different name. What is a farm? Farm is land rented and devoted to purposes of agriculture. Rented. Farm, or fjorm, is an old Saxon word signifying the word provision. It came to be used instead of rent or render, like Caesar renders the person of man. Remember, Caesar in the Bible taxed and registered every single man because Caesar was God. God said that everybody should be registered and taxed. Well, same thing. We're talking about rent here. Namely, corn, grain, poultry, etc., to the use of money became more frequent. Money, again, the root of all evil. So a farmer was one who held his lands upon payment of rent or fjorm, though at present by gradual departure from the original sense, the word farm signifies the very estate or lands so held upon farm or rent. That which is held by a person who stands in the relation of a tenant to a landlord. Do you think the Bundys are free people? Do you think the Bundys are a private people? Well, I don't honestly know their status, but I know the status of their ranch. The ranch is a registered corporation of the United States. It is a public entity run by public persons, surnamed person. In the feudal system, we used to call this fee. Everybody's familiar with fee simple in these types of terms. A fee farm means to let lands to farm in fee simple instead of for life or for years. It's going back to the blood again. So the fee had to do with the blood, giving your heirs the fee. In the feudal system, the land itself so held on perpetual rent. Perpetual rent. The rent never goes away. The farm never goes away. To farm out something, when we look at the definitions, and I'm actually reading from William C. Anderson's 1889 dictionary. To farm out is a term that means to rent for a term of years. Also, to give over something to another for a share of the income or profit, as to farm out revenues or taxes. Now, what's funny to me about that is when you start doing the research, you find out that tax collectors, and I never knew this before, I had to put the pieces together, of course, but tax collectors are actually called farmers. Farmers of taxes. Now it all makes sense. Tax farmers. Makes perfect sense. Absolutely. Cultivating the taxes from the renters or the farmers. Makes perfect sense all of a sudden. So where does that leave us? Where does that leave us with the frickin' Bundy Ranch and all that crap that just went in? Those idiots who committed treason against the federal government, trying to take over land that is not theirs, that they have no right to whatsoever. Because of their status, because of the way they act in person, in public person, as United States citizens, absolutely no right to do what they did whatsoever. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to give any sympathy, I'm not going to give any play, I'm not going to give any credit to these total, complete idiots out there who have no idea of, one, what their status is, how the law applies to their particular situation. Keep in mind that the ranch, all that stuff, the farm, the rent, was a U.S. corporation, public, and it in the rent compact, in the contract, they are absolutely required to pay a fee to the United States government to have their cattle graze on public lands owned, I believe, in this case, by the Bureau of Land Management. Now, you got to ask yourself, what the heck is the Bureau of Land Management? There's a fallacy out there, first of all, that the federal government can't own lands. Now, if you're talking the vulgar concept, sure, they can't own land, but they can own what they define as land, which is the paper, which is the what the private people of each state in their enabling acts gave over to the Bureau of Land Management. Now, I hate to tell you this, folks. A lot of you, this is probably going to surprise you. But it's something you really need to know. When we are talking about the creation of a state, there is first something called an enabling act. Okay? What is an enabling act? Oh, I don't know if I have a definition around here or not, but probably not. But let's go and understand. Okay, enabling act. This is the history of the state legislature for Washington State on the West Coast there. What is an enabling act? It's an act to provide for the division of Dakota, this particular act, of Dakota into two states, and to enable the people of North Dakota, which are the private people, not you public slaves, South Dakota, Montana, and Washington to form their own constitutions and state governments and to be admitted to the Union on, quote-unquote, equal footing with the original states, those original 13 colonies, and to make donations of public lands to such states. Before there was a state constitution in any of the western states, which is where most of the public lands lie. I think there's 36% of lands in the United States are public lands under the federal government, managed under the federal government. Okay, again, equal footing with the original states, and to make donations of public lands to such states. What is a donation, folks? Why do I only take donations or gifts? I'm more on the gift side, but a donation is similar. A donation is something that you give. You don't receive, you give. Right? Well, wait a minute. So you're telling me that before a state could even become a state, they had to make donations of public lands? Well, who are they making it to? This particular enabling act, approved February 22nd, 1889, 25 U.S. Code statutes at large. And, of course, the president, the executive branch, is who proclaims the state to be a state. It says, be it enacted that the Senate and the House of Representatives of the United States of America and Congress assembled, that the inhabitants of all that part of the area of the United States, now constituting the territories of those we just mentioned, may become the states of those we just mentioned, respectively, and herein provided. So you have the enabling. This is still from the Enabling Act. A lot of the Enabling Act is transferred over to the state constitutions. All right? Why is this important? Why is Clint reading this to us? Why does that? Well, you see, in each of the newer states, in the Western, I should say, most of the Western constitutions, all of them, I'm sorry, we have what's called the enabling clause that is transferred over to the state constitution. And here's what it says. And I'm only going to read a few of these because they're very similar in each case. Okay, this was for all those states that we just mentioned. First, the perfect toleration of religious sentiment shall be secured, and that no inhabitant of said state shall ever be molested in person or property on account of his or her mode of religious worship. Don't worry, Satanists, you're protected. Don't worry, Muslims, you are protected. Don't worry, Christians, never mind. Second, that the people inhabiting, now listen to this very carefully, folks, this is in your state constitution. If you're in any one of the states that are not the original 13 colonies or farms or plantations, is another word for colony, all right? If you're not in those original 13 rents, well, then you're probably got similar wording in your state constitution. The only exception that I know of is Texas, but Texas was brutally beaten down. Texas doesn't have much ground to stand on for saying that they are free. When you actually read the proclamations that were done, the federal government said basically that any time Texas gets out of line, it's going to come down there and kick some frickin' ass. Maybe I'll find that later. Not important to me, but because we're all slaves to this system. Second, in the Enabling Act, Section 4, here's what it says. That the people inhabiting said proposed states do agree and declare that they forever disclaim, release any claim, all right and title. Again, they forever disclaim all right and title, all right and title to the unappropriated public lands lying within the boundaries thereof, and to all lands lying within said limits owned or held by an Indian or Indian tribes, those are all federal lands, not Indian lands, and that until the title thereto shall have been extinguished by the United States, the same shall be and remain subject to the disposition of the United States, and said Indian lands shall remain under the absolute jurisdiction and control of Congress of the United States. That the lands belonging to the citizens of the United States residing without the said states shall never be taxed at a higher rate, etc., etc., etc. That no taxes shall be imposed by the states on lands or property therein belonging to, or which may hereafter be purchased by the United States or reserved for its use. So I want you to understand here something, folks. This just told you what public lands actually are. remember, anything public is essentially for our intents and purposes, for all intents and purposes, federal, federally controlled. Anything that's not private is going to be in the public sphere, which is controlled by the federal law. You know what federal means? Surprisingly, many people don't. I certainly didn't. Pertaining to a league or compact between independent sovereignties. Folks, you're not part of the sovereignty of the each state. You're a temporary resident there. It even made the distinction. What did it say? It said that the lands belonging to citizens of the United States residing without the said states, in other words, outside of the private lands of the landholders of the states, shall never be taxed higher. You see the distinction there? It's always going to make a distinction between the sovereign people and the common people. So anything that's federal pertains to a league or compact between independent sovereignties composed of states, which retain only a portion of their original sovereignty relating to the Constitution, treaties, or laws, or the power of government of the organization thereby formed. Appropriate to our general government, the government of the United States, considered as a union of states or local governments. The word national recognizes the state governments and the government of the union as distinct systems. If you're a citizen of the United States, you are in a distinct government. You are not a citizen of any state. You are not the sovereignty. I can't stress how important it is to know that you are not one of the people, that you are not acting as a party to the Constitution when you're acting in a United States commercial citizenship, when you're acting in interstate commerce only as a foreigner in any of these states or without the said private states. You are not the sovereignty. You are not we the people. You are not party to the Constitution because you have not, to be clear, whoever is private and has withheld their rights from the United States, that's what the United States Constitution protects. It's a negative document. It says do no harm to those who have not surrendered themselves and become subjects of the United States. That's the majority of us out here. And these people are reaping the benefits. They are very happy to steal our lands every time our bloodline dies out. All right, so again, I really want to cover this. it's important, though, to understand the Enabling Acts. Again, let's go. That was for those few states. Here's Alabama, for instance. I know it's here. Where are you? Alabama. Fourth. Oh, come on. These constitutions are so long and droning. Here it is in Alabama, another example, an early state, and provided always that the said convention shall provide by ordinance irrevocable without the consent of the United States, that the people inhabiting the said territory do agree and declare that they forever disclaim all right and title to the waste. Waste is a term for land that's not privatized or unappropriated lands lying within the said territory, and that the same shall be and remain in the sole and entire disposition of the United States, and moreover that each and every tract of land sold by the United States after the first day of September in the year 1819 shall be and remain exempt from any tax laid by the order or under the authority of the state, etc., 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 etc. Again, before these states could become states of the United States, in other words, before they could come back into the Union after being utterly destroyed by the North, especially the Southern states, when those who confederated, in order to be and continue to be part of the United States, they had to redo essentially their constitutions to include these enabling acts, enabling things. So This is in all the constitutions, folks. You can check it out yourself. It's usually Section 4. Sometimes it's in Section 2. But for the most part, they all follow the same. It's like a contract that everybody signs. It's like the same constitution for each state. They might word it differently. Some thank God. Some thank the supreme being. Some thank deity. But it's all the same. It's the same contract. They word it differently so it sounds different, but it's the same, man. Each one of these states had to agree to these enabling acts after the Civil War. Why is that important? What does that have to do with anything? The Civil War? Oh, man, we've got so much to learn in so little time. Frequently asked question. Now, what's important about the Civil War is that it never ended. Let me say that again. Why is it? Why? What's the deal with the Civil War? Yeah, it never ended. Let me go to the National Park Service here. This is the Appomattox Courthouse webpage, National Historic Park in Virginia. Frequently Asked Questions section. It says, "Where is the courthouse? Where the surrender took place? Where is this? Where's the courthouse where the surrender took place?" In the Civil War. Now, a surrender in the war itself doesn't mean anything. Surrender is nothing. Surrender occurred in the village of Appomattox Courthouse. Used to call villages by that name, Courthouse, Virginia, in a private home owned by McLean family. In Virginia, many of the towns, which were county seats, were called Courthouse. The building is spelled courthouse, one word, and the town is courthouse, two words. Why is this important? Well, the next question is, where was the treaty signed? Where was the treaty signed to declare peace, which is a requirement for a war to end? Here's what your government tells you. Still at the Appomattox Courthouse website. Where was the treaty signed? Oh, there was no treaty signed to end the Civil War. There was no fucking treaty signed to end the Civil War. Do you understand that, folks? Do you understand that we've been under emergency powers since the Civil War? And you don't understand that emergency is another way of saying war, and that the war against the emergency is where all the war statutes come from, that we were labeled as enemies of the state long ago in the 1913, I can't remember the exact date, again, all this information. Where was the treaty signed? There was no treaty signed in the Civil War, you idiots. The surrender at Appomattox Courthouse was a military surrender of an army which was surrounded. Now, listen to this very carefully, folks. The Confederate government never surrendered, and even had it wanted to, the United States government would likely not have accepted its surrender. To do so would have legally acknowledged the existence of the Confederate States of America, and would have legitimized it and given it certain legal status internationally. Treaties, of course, are between two nations, and the U.S. would never concede a legal existence of the Confederacy, even though it had a government, armies, taxes, and all the trappings of a modern government. You see, if the United States folks would have recognized the Confederacy as a legitimate government, oh boy, it would have had to fall under the rules of war and all the conventions and all those different aspects of treating people fairly and nicely, and it wouldn't have been able to go force all the white guys out of government and put all the black guys into government for the first time, even though it's against the state constitutions to have blacks in government. Now, again, this is an emotionalist conversation. I'm not interested in racism, etc., etc. That's all bullshit. That's all complete bullshit. And I'll tell you why that's bullshit. Because there were more black slave traders that traded blacks and slaveholders that traded blacks than there were whites. You can find that in the census data. Go to Louisiana, for instance. I'm not interested in the race baiting. I'm not interested in it anymore. Why? Because I found out that a white person, what is a white person as defined in the Constitution, has nothing to do with your actual skin color. A white person, Barack Obama is a white person. He's not our first black president. He's a white person. He's got the blood of the Dunham clan. He is a direct descendant of the kings of England, just like all our presidents are, and just like all our presidents are going to be. You got Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton probably going to run. They're 18th cousins from the same, direct descendants from the same grandparents. All right, so you're talking about a big family affair here. Just like World War I was a war between the families. It didn't make any sense when you think about it. Why were the families, why was the same family warring with each other? Well, it's purely for commercial purposes. That's what war is. War is commerce. Commerce is war. War happens when commerce gets stuck up. When there's too many sanctions, when there's too many things that are happening. What is a sanction? Well, when we pass a law, if there's no sanction, then people probably aren't going to pass the law. So when we pass a law, we pass a sanction along with the law, which says if you do not follow our law, even though we have no authority to pass this law over your sovereign nation, but if you don't follow our law, well, we're going to kick your ass in this way and this way and this way. We're going to put your people in prison. We're going to invade you, chemical weaponize you and pretty much destroy your culture. That's the sanctions we're going to put on if you don't follow our law. See, what good is law without punishment, right? You're all under sanction. None of you have sanctuary from the sanctions because you're not private, you're public. So any law they pass, you agree to automatically. All those millions and millions and millions of laws. Yes, I'm sorry to tell you that. It's not you. You're just the agent for the bird. You're the volunteer, man. You're the servant. It's your person that the law is attached to because your person is not you. Person is a creation of the God that created it. It's not the creator. It's not God. It's not Jehovah. No. The government is God. That's what the magistrates are. They're gods. And you obey God while you're a citizen. This is why in the court cases that you read that are 50 years or older, they always use the word pray. You didn't plea. You prayed to your God, to your judge. You prayed. You made a prayer to the judge to forgive your frickin' sins. It's all religious. They still use it in some cases. But I really want to get this across. Folks, the Civil War never officially actually ended. When you're talking about, you know how Orwell says war is peace and what were the other ones? I can't remember. It's very important to understand that freedom is slavery. Freedom means franchise. When you have a franchise to be free, it means you can operate within the jurisdiction of the United States as an agent. But you have absolutely no access to anything that would make you actually free, that would give you sanctuary, that would give you freedom from the sanctions of law, from the punishments of law, in other words. Okay, you're in a franchise. That's what freedom means, folks. Franchise. Every word has a special meaning in law. And they're very happy that you're patriotic about that, about your freedom, about your public franchise, your citizenship that you get to sail and be exacted and extorted and punished and put in pain. Do you know about section 1981 of Title 42 of the U.S. Code? Are you familiar with Title 42? Section 1981, it's absolutely my favorite part of U.S. Code. I like to say it often, and I wish people would create a T-shirt of it. because it's just so shocking when you read it for the first time. Here's what it says: 42 U.S. Code, Section 1981. All persons. Oh, and by the way, this is the equal rights under the law statement. All these terms are bullshit, folks. Come on. Equal rights under the law. Only a slave has equal rights. Who has equal rights? Let's think about it. Cattle, pigs, hamsters, rats that you feed your snakes maybe that are pets. Who has equal frickin' rights? Only protected species, right? Well, we're a protected species. And with our protection, we give fucking subjection. Right? That's the law of protectionism. With protection comes subjection. That's freedom for you, baby. So what does 42 U.S. Code tell you as a 14th Amendment citizen? Equal rights under the law. Now here's the statement of equal rights. All persons within the jurisdiction of the United States shall have the same right in every state and territory to make and enforce contracts, to sue, to be parties, to give evidence, and to the full and equal benefit of all laws and proceedings for the security of persons and property as is enjoyed by white citizens, and all persons within the jurisdiction of the United States who have all those same rights shall be subject. I want you to listen to this, folks, because this is your damn law. This is your law of the land. I want you to understand this. This is the law that binds you. You shall, as a citizenship of the United States, public, you shall be subject to like punishment, pains, penalties, taxes, licenses, and exactions, which means extortion, the taking of something that is not the due of the taker, exactions of every kind, and to no other. And then it gives you the devil's right, it gives you the right to make and enforce contracts, making performance modification and termination of contracts, because that's to ensure that you're in the contractual relationship of citizenship. And most importantly, fitting right into our dialogue today, these rights, and you see, this is the problem, see, these are your rights. These aren't privileges. These are your rights. Rights are forced upon you. They're called positive law, positive rights, something that is forced upon you. That's not negative. That's not do no harm. That's not, hey, leave me alone, like the Constitution is designed to do for the private people. No, the public people, they go under this. And you see, as a public United States citizen, as a foreign resident, as a temporary foreign resident who cannot hold land, because I'm not a private person of any of the states, I'm a United States citizen, a foreigner, with temporary residence, this U.S. code that says I'm subject to like punishment, pains, penalties, taxes, license, exactions, extortions of every kind and no other, here's what it says in Section C. It says the rights protected and therefore subjected to by you. The rights protected by this section are protected against impairment by non-governmental discrimination and impairment under color of state law. What does that mean, folks? All you idiots out there who are United States citizens, and who are cheering for states' rights, which is almost an oxymoron, that means that whatever the United States government does to you while you're residing in any state, no state law can protect you, because you're already protected. You're in a rental ship, a rental car from the United States, and therefore you're under United States law above any state law. The states aren't there for you. They're there against you. They're there to welcome you into their bosom of commerce, interstate commerce, and because you're a foreign resident, everything you do is interstate. And they tax you, and they exact you, and they extort you, and they give you a license, and they give you penalties and pains and punishments according to what the federal law allows them to. Now, why is this important? Most important aspect of this, besides the notion that rights aren't a good thing, when you're contracting them like a disease from a fiction, and you give up your natural right in order for some fictional rights, your negative rights in exchange for a positive right, positive meaning something that can be enforced upon you, well, you have no protections, folks. No state law is going to help you. I don't give a shit what you do to make and change the laws in your state. All your propositions out there in California, they mean shit to you. They give you a very, very crappy benefit in exchange for the benefit that you think you win by voting in a voting franchise, as they officially call it. Not elections, but voting. Only slaves vote. Keep that in mind, folks. Only slaves vote, because you're always voting for something higher than you. Something that controls you. Just drives me crazy that we are so stupid. There's a lot of information on the Enabling Acts. There's a lot of, I pulled up one from the legislature of the Idaho government, for instance. The 2013 interim, lands 0809 COCAN presentation. It's a PDF. It has a lot of good information. It's about 113 pages. Federal government as a neutral bulk broker with clean title. Why were these enabling acts so important? Why was it so important for the states to hand over, without any recourse whatsoever, their lands to the federal government? So that the government could have the lands in a purely clean title, a perfect title that they could then get the most money for when sold to private investors, private people. Okay, why do you think? See, here's the this is the, kind of the other funny part about this. Why do you think? Okay, there's two opinions going on here. One is the opinion of the public people, the idiocracy, as I like to call it, which is all of us. I include myself in that, because as long as I'm still operating in the United States citizenship, then I'm as much as an idiot as anybody else out there. I have to be governed, in other words, because I'm not privately governing myself. I'm not into self-government. You have the people who think somehow that getting public lands attached back to the state is going to help them. Okay, fine. That doesn't make any sense, but okay. It goes from federal land to state land. It's not your land. The best that can happen is that land gets assigned to a private investor, gets developed, and then again, you get a mortgage, an imperfect title, a non-clean title on the land. You have no rights of inheritance because you're still a temporary resident in that state. The private landholders get it all, and you basically still have nothing except the ability to then live in someone else's house and someone else's drive someone else's car and be a happy little American citizen. But then there's the other view of the states. Well, we just, you know, why would the states want their lands back? Why would they want to have to manage their own lands? Doesn't make much sense, because the whole purpose of government managing these lands is until they sell them at a premium price with the clean title. See, once you get perfect title, there's nothing these states can do, honestly. Now, the legislatures, of course, made up of representatives of the states, could certainly change, do a lot. I mean, you got to realize that this is all a scam, that they are there strictly for show, that the representatives of the private states are not interested in breaking up the union, because it's the union that actually controls all of us. They're not going to take their lands back. They're not interested in that. If they ever do, it's because the United States is failing so miserably, which is seriously doubtful that that'll actually ever happen. All right, so states, they don't want their lands back. They're very happy having the federal government control them, keeping us pests off the land, us public persons off their land. until they have some private landholding. And that's the designation of the Bureau of Land Management. They hold on to the land until some private owner, private landholder, wants to get their hands on it. That's what they do. Your problem is you're approaching it as a public person. You think you're private, but you're public. No, nothing private about public. That's all of our mistakes for the most part. This document in Idaho says the federal government as a neutral broker with clean title. Why was it so important for them to get the clean title? Well, let's consider the ends to be achieved here by the handing over the federal lands, or the public lands, to the federal government without any ability to get them back. And we'll prove that here real quick. The federal government needed clean titles to lands so that it could dispose of those properties to willing buyers, according to the legislature of Ohio. There was a fear that potential buyers would be unwilling to purchase lands from either the federal government or the state government if the buyers could not be sure which one had superior title. The UEA, or the Utah Enabling Act, which is what this was geared towards, resolved that and sent a signal to would-be buyers of the world that the uncertainty of title had been resolved. The state, in return, also gave a promise that added further certainty to the buyers. The state agreed it did not have the power to interfere with the process of disposal or with rights granted through disposal. Now, the right of disposal is something that only private landholders have. You can sell your title. You can transfer your title. You can use and enjoy property all you want, but you have no right of disposal. In other words, the title's always registered. It's always under Caesar. Always under that district. As long as you're a United States citizen, it's always held. Every single one of your houses, every single one of the cities you live in, all the municipal corporations are set up to make you municeps, which is an old Latin term, of course, left over from Rome. Municep is someone who's bound by the cities. Cities are set up to control you, not to help you. No, they're there because you're part of the movable land, and you're under the law of the land. So disposal is a, quote-unquote, privilege of the private landholder, not a right of the rentor, which is all of you, all of the tenants out there. This is very important. You must understand what a right is and what a privy or privilege is. They're two different things. Only private people have privileges. What is called a privilege in the public domain or what is called private is things like copyright. It's not really private. It's all publicly registered stuff. So when they use the word private in the public, it doesn't mean the same thing. Finally, says the state, as part of its obligation under the compact, gave the federal government the clean title and agreed not to interfere with the federal disposition, which included not prejudicing the private recipient of title gained through disposal. Not prejudicing the private recipient of title gained through disposal. When the federal government disposes of land, it will always be to private functionaries. When I say that, that includes any of the private or several states. Separate but equal. What was the necessity of giving clean title? Why in these enabling acts was it so important to establish that the states forever disclaimed their right of all the unappropriated lands to the federal government? Why was it so necessary to have a clean, perfect title? Well, to give the United States clean title and for the states to accept a duty of non-interference. Okay, that's the contract, that's the compact, that's the Constitution, in other words, of each state. So that the federal government could dispose of property with certainty of title, which would be necessary to attract market purchasers. Hey folks, do you know what the word purchase means? Do you know what purchase means? It means to conquer. You see, there's two ways to conquer a people and a land. One of those is through war and tyranny. The other is through money, through purchase, or through beads. Whatever your money is, purchase means conquer. So, let's see, continuing. So that in the first instance, the United States could directly realize and control the gains from the disposals, such that it could use the proceeds in accordance with the, its commitments made to the original state, such as paying off Revolutionary War debts, etc. When the constitutions were made, they were, and always, you know, any constitution is always a debt compact. Look it up, folks. There is no constitution created that is not a debt compact, a performance debt, or a financial debt. So that, because the United States would be successful in disposing of property to willing buyers at full price, i.e. not discounted by uncertainty, the United States could sell at the highest price possible, which also benefited the state of Utah because they received a percentage of such sales elsewhere in the Utah Enabling Act, particularly Section 9, which says that 5% of the proceeds of the sales of public lands lying within said state, capitalized, which means private, which shall be sold by the United States subsequent to the admission of said state into the Union, etc., etc., etc. This has to do with the schools. It's just such a... This whole subject just pisses me off. Idaho Act of Admission says public lands, number 7, section 7, sale percent paid state for school fund. 5% of the proceeds of the sales of public lands lying within said state, which shall be sold by the United States subsequent to the admission of the said state into the Union after deducting all the expenses incident to the same, shall be paid to the said state. Now, again, you think there's competition going on here, folks? You think again, that the private states who created the federal government are actually in competition with the government? No, folks, come on. And think about it. You think the United States is actually in competition with the Federal Reserve? Are you frickin' kidding me? Do you really think that there's competition in government? Do you believe the left-right paradigm? Do you believe that the Democrats and the Republicans are actually fighting each other? You don't think they're just there for show? You don't think the whole thing? I mean, you should know by now, if you don't, that you don't actually elect your president. You vote just to enable the Electoral College and give it legitimacy. All your votes don't count. If you look up the United States, we have an indirect election for a president. We don't elect the people, the common people do not elect the president, as opposed to supposedly communist China, where the people actually do elect their president. In this regard, we are so much less free than China, it's pathetic. But we have no idea because they put on a media show and spend billions and billions and billions of dollars. They've now created the potential for unlimited spending in elections to further the matrix, the illusion that we actually elect our own president. No, 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 no. Folks, I remember when Burke's Peerage. He always predicted who the next president was going to be by their blood. How much royal blood did they have? And he was right every year but one. And the only reason he was wrong in that year is because he didn't have enough information on Leslie Lynch King. A lot of people say every president are related or cousins except one, which was Gerald Ford. But see, the problem is we didn't realize his actual name was Leslie Lynch King. When you put that information in, and when you get Clinton's information in there, then you see, yeah, okay, it's a family affair. And Burke's Peerage is always right. The president with the most blood always takes the stage. Obama, again, a white person, as defined in Black's Law 4th, I believe. If you actually look it up, it says it has nothing to do with skin color, it's your blood. White person means you have white blood, not skin color. It even says your skin could be dark and you can still be a white person. The race thing is total bullshit, designed to keep you controlled. It's designed to keep you fighting amongst each other, because guess what? You're all equal. You're all equally slaves. See, the 14th Amendment didn't raise slaves up to the level of private citizens. It lowered migrant workers, people who came over here from all the different countries, Germany and China and Ireland, all the workers, they all got lowered to the level of slave. That's what the 14th Amendment did. 13th Amendment didn't stop slavery. It centralized it into the United States, said, hey, you landholders can't have any slaves anymore. Only the United States can have slaves. What does the 13th Amendment say? It says voluntary servitude and voluntary slavery are quite legal as long as we can convict you of a crime. But voluntary servitude and that's why you have the whole private prison system the way it is. The made in America symbol on all the products that are coming from the private prisons. You see, slavery is quite legal. All you have to do is be condemned. All you have to do is be treated as a criminal. Well, that's what birth is. The reason for birth is to publicly indoctrinate everybody, put them into a state of what's basically a criminal act of being born, being abandoned at birth and put into this legal system. I mean, essentially, you're all doomed at birth. You're all criminals. We, I should say, are all criminals. We can all be made into voluntary subjects, voluntary servants, voluntary slaves. Our volunteerism happened at birth, but more so at the confirmation of that birth of the person, that legal id entity, that legal identity. We sign for it. We participate in it. We do all these things. Now, I'm going to spend the last part of this thing today reading the official source, reading from, I should say, the official source. I was making a documentary on this, got sidetracked with my book. Let me pull this up real quick. Now, this is actually from this is what's called a CRS report. This particular for Congress, by the way. So again, I'm not gonna read you what any of the shock jocks have to say. I'm not gonna read you what the Bundys have to say, because their opinion means absolutely jack shit. It's not the law. It's not what was agreed to in the state constitutions. They don't have states' rights. They are federal citizens, and they only have citizens of. Again, you know, you can go on forever on this and prove it over and over and over. This is from December 3rd, 2007. CRS report for Congress, federal land ownership. You can find this yourself. Federal land ownership, constitutional authority, and the history of acquisition, disposal, and retention. Now, this great thing about this is it's coming from the source. It's coming from Congress. All right? You're not going to trump this. I don't know what to tell you, folks. Your opinion, your love, your beliefs mean jack shit. This is from the source. If you're not willing to go to source, then you're going to remain confused. If you're not willing to give up your perspective and your opinion while you're operating in someone else's property, while you're operating under someone else's citizenship, or someone else's person, someone else's legal status, then you're never going to get it. You're never going to come around. You're never going to understand what the hell's happening to you, or what the hell was happening to the Bundy Ranch, all that shit that was happening out there, until you grasp the fact that you're a public person, not a private one. Okay? And public persons are bound by the law of persons. You're only there to act as the puppet master for the puppet. The puppet belongs to someone else. Its laws belong to someone else. Its laws are made by someone else, not you. You have no frickin' choice as to what law binds your person. I can't stress that enough. And you have to separate yourself from that artificial self, that personification, that anthropomorphization of self that we call Clint Richardson or Bob Smith. As soon as I identify myself as a public person, I'm under public law, period, end of story. You don't get a choice in the matter, I'm sorry. Yes, there's remedy. Yes, all remedy means is that you get some money for being a slave. That's all it means. You're not ending a contract. You're not ending your relationship. You're getting paid off to be a good little house slave. That's all it means. Remedy is bullshit, folks. Everybody's going to offer you remedy. Purpose of remedy is to keep you in a contract, pay you off. And you might feel successful until you go back and you realize you're still in the same chains you always were. And in order to get any kind of rights or privileges, you're going to have to go through this whole system of law of persons. Federal Land Ownership Constitutional Authority and the History of Acquisition, Disposal, and Retention. Again, December 3rd, 2007. This is a long report, but I'm reading this because I really want you to know what it means from the source. Not from all these idiots out there. Not from all the parrots and the patriots. Not the controlled opposition. No. Let's go to the source, folks. My life has been going to the source. Prepared for the members of committees of Congress, Congressional Research Service is what CRS means. Federal Land Ownership, Constitutional Authority, and the History of Acquisition, Disposal. Remember, you don't have the right of disposal, and retention. The summary reads as follows. Now, this is probably going to take me to the end of the show, and we'll just say goodbye there real quick at the end of the show. I appreciate the chance to be on here. Thank you, UCY, and Mr. Shaliak. Summary. Federal land ownership began when the original 13 states ceded their western lands between the Appalachian Mountains and the Mississippi River to the central government between 1781 and 1802. Substantial land acquisition in North America via treaties and purchases began with the Louisiana Purchase in 1803. And remember, purchase means conquer, folks. Louisiana conquering, in other words, in 1803 and culminated with the purchase or conquer of Alaska in 1867. In total, the federal government acquired 1.8 billion acres in North America. No, the federal government can't own land. Really? Where do you get this bullshit? Bullshit! It's not from any source. It's not. I mean, it's ridiculous. Sorry. Just had to throw that in. That was not what the Congress said, by the way. Continuing, the U.S. Constitution addresses the relationship of the federal government to lands. Article 4, Section 3, Clause 2. The Property Clause gives Congress authority over federal property generally, and the Supreme Court has described Congress's power. The Supreme Court, folks. Well, who else are you going to appeal to, huh? Besides the patriot idiocracy out there. And the Supreme Court has described Congress's power to legislate under this clause as without limitation. So the Supreme Court, totally contrary to popular alternative media opinion, has said that, federal property under the federal legislature, they rule that without limitation, folks. Sorry. Without limitation. Let that sink in. Because you're not going to go. I mean, who are you going to go to? Who are you going to go to higher than the Supreme Court, huh? I've told people before, look, you ever want to change anything, you better stop looking to the law. You better stop doing your little resolutions and your voting. You better find out who the private people of your state are. And this could get me killed, honestly. The one thing that I fear is actually telling people, hey, start exposing who your private landholders are. Who the hell owns the land that you actually live on, that you think you own, but you don't? You better start finding those people. Who are the owners of the lands of the cities? Who are these people? I know who some of them are in Utah. A couple of them are actually in jail for fraud. One of them was our attorney general. Actually, both were attorney generals. They were also electors, of course. Because only the private people were electors. So, I keep telling people, look, you ever want to make a change? Think of the movies. Think of some of the movies. Think of some of those Jean-Claude Van Damme type of movies where the one landholder, the one corporation, basically runs the entire town. Everybody's afraid of their little gang, right? That's the people you need to start talking to. That's the people you need to start saying, hey, there's, 300 million of us and 60 million of you. I don't know how many private people there actually are in the States. How many actual private landholders there are, I honestly don't know. I haven't done the research. But if you ever want to change anything, folks, you're going to have to find out who they are. Who are the stakeholders? Who are the people who own the land, the actual perfect title that you are a tenant and an user of? And you're going to have to start putting some pressure on those people to start fixing the government so that it doesn't treat us like shit anymore. That's the only way you're going to change. It's not going to be by voting. It's not going to be by any other way, folks. You're going to actually have to say, hey, look, we've put up with this shit way too long. You've stolen our birthrights. You've pirated every single piece of property that we can own. We have nothing to fucking live for because you've stolen it all. You're going to have to start talking to these people, the private people who are benefiting from your enslavement, the benefiting from the fact that you have nothing, that you can leave your children nothing except paper with a 50% death tax. And they'll probably have to sell the estate just to pay the tax. I really want you to understand this, folks. Your government ain't going to do anything unless the people that created the government, the sovereignty, feels pressure. Think about the Magna Carta, folks. Why did the king sign the Magna Carta, even though his very fact that he was under duress pretty much nullified the Magna Carta? Why did he sign it? Because a bunch of people came up and said, hey, king, if you don't do something to change the way you're treating the common folks and even the upper class folks, we're going to kill you. Now, I'm not saying go and threaten these people and say you're going to kill them. I'm saying the only people that there actually are, the private people, we the people, are the ones that need to have pressure put on them by the slaves. If that doesn't make sense, I don't know what does. Because they're always going to act their part, and you're always going to act your part until something changes, until someone steps up and says, hey, sovereignty, we've put up with your shit so long now. It's time to give back a little bit. You know, you're all the CEOs, you're all the actors, you're all the high-profile people out there, you're all the philanthropists, great, wonderful. You have all the money, you have all the property, you have everything. You better start treating us better or we're going to have no – what's going to be left? What's going to be our option? What's going to be left in our lives but to revolt? I know you keep drugging us. You keep passing laws that says our children are going to have to be vaccinated with more drugs and are going to keep them down, give them autism, give them all these things. At some point, folks, I'm telling you, law is never going to – you're never going to change their system. It's their government. They created it. The private states created the federal government. And you're in its military. If you're a military – you are a mercenary for the United States. You're a prostitute. You prostitute for the constituted authorities. That's all you are. Everything you do is as an agent for your principal. Everything you do, every life you take, every land that you grab in another country is no different than what they've done to us. Purchase or conquer, it's the same thing. All right, let me... Since I only got through a paragraph and a half, let me try not to rant here. Congress's power to legislate under this clause is without limitation. The equal footing doctrine that everybody quotes, we want equal rights, slaves must have equal rights, based on language within Article 4, Section 3, Clause 1, and founding state enabling acts. Notice it mentions the Enabling Acts right away. Provides new states with equality to the original states in terms of constitutional rights. So in other words, the private people have their constitutional rights. Those who reserve all rights have the right not to be affected by federal law, is what that means. But it has not been used successfully to force the divestment of federal lands back into the states. The policy question of whether to acquire more or dispose of any or all federal lands is always left to Congress to decide. And now, this is a provable statement because the state of Nevada, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it might have been Arizona, but I think it was Nevada, Utah as well, we passed laws. Our legislator in our state passed laws that said, hey, federal government, you must give our lands back. Problem is, they're not our lands. We gave them up unilaterally without condition. I should say bilaterally. We gave them up. We have all rights and privileges were given to the United States. Perfect title, clean title was given to the United States. There is no demanding it back. It's ludicrous to think that way. Of course, that means think publicly. Public-mindedness, which is where they want us. The policy question of whether to acquire more or dispose of all federal land is always left to Congress. So you got these constitutions in Nevada specifically that actually have a before and after clause. It says, okay, legislators voted for to take back the lands, but we can't do that until Congress actually says that, yes, we're going to give you back your lands. So they have a before, which is the same constitution, and they have an after section that says when and if Congress ever grants our wish, our prayer to the gods, well, then this will be the new constitution. And that's how the constitution sits. You can look it up right now. I think it's Nevada. It's ridiculous. It shows you how little power there actually is in this public sphere. The initial federal policy generally was to transfer ownership of many federal lands to private and state ownership. Congress, never to the public, Congress, or never to United States citizens, Congress enacted many laws granting lands and authorizing or directing sales or transfers, ultimately disposing of 1.27 billion acres out of that original 1.8. However, from the earliest times, Congress also provided for reserving lands for federal purposes. And over time has reserved and withdrawn areas for such entities as national parks, national forests, and wildlife refuges. So, you know, that's what I'd do. I mean, let's be honest, it's what I'd reserve that land too. I'm not stupid. I'm going to profit off that land. The Taylor Grazing Act of 1934 was enacted to remedy the deterioration of the range on the remaining public lands. Here we start to get into the Bundy question. This was the first direct authority for federal management of these lands and implicitly began the shift towards ending disposals and retaining lands. So this was 1934. It was basically right after 1933 when everything changed, essentially. That's when the president was given basically unlimited authority by Congress to, which is a whole other subject. You can read the what's it called, the War Powers Act, if you want to look that up, by Eugene Schroeder. Otherwise, we'll talk about it some other time, maybe with Shali. First direct authority for federal management of these lands and implicitly began the shift towards ending disposals and retaining lands in federal ownership. In 1976, Congress formally declared that national policy was generally to retain the remaining lands in federal ownership in the Federal Land Policy and Management Acts. Oh, but Congress, but the federal government can't own lands. Folks, wake up. Wake up from your own movement. Wake up from these parrots who are... Go to the source, is all I'm telling you. The Sagebrush Rebellion, as it's called, quote-unquote, was a collection of very unsuccessful state and local efforts beginning in 1978 to assert title to federal lands or force their divestiture. And again, federal government has perfect title, clean title. There is no residue. There's nothing that the states can grab onto and say, hey, look, we're still part land title holder here. No, they gave it up. What is so hard to understand about that? So any demands, any efforts to get these lands backed by states have nothing to do with the demand. It will be a choice of Congress, nothing else. And I guarantee you they're not going to give up this corporate asset that we call lands that they can rent out to oil companies and all these different corporations. You should do your own research and see how many different corporations are actually renting these lands that we call public lands. It's because the United States, as a corporation, is reaping all the benefits, paying a little bit to the states. So it's not like the states are losing. To assert title to federal lands and force their divestiture, it also included efforts by the Reagan administration and in Congress to divest of many federal lands, which also proved unsuccessful. Make no mistake, Reagan was a douche, spokesmodel for cigarettes, etc. Legislation on federal land disposal continues to be considered. Bills for the wholesale disposal have not been introduced in more than a decade. This, again, was 2007. But legislation has been introduced to limit federal land ownership or acquisition, to expand disposal authorities, at least in some areas, to sell lands to pay for other activities, and to accelerate currently authorized land sales. Because the extent of the federal lands and the authority to acquire and dispose of federal lands are an enduring policy question, Congress faces continued consideration of federal lands legislation. Now we get to the main article of federal land ownership. So the federal government has retained about a third of the 1.8 billion acres that Reagan acquired in North America. These lands are heavily concentrated in 12 western states, including Alaska, but not Hawaii, where in total the federal government owns more than half the land, ranging from 30% in Montana to 84% in Nevada. Many western citizens and members of Congress continue to express concerns about what they feel is excessive federal influence over their lives and economies, and assert that the federal government should divest itself of many of these lands. Which is basically like going to Caesar, getting on your knees, and begging the actual, title holder to. It's just not going to happen. Others support the policy of retaining these lands in federal ownership. This report describes practices and authority for federal land ownership and retention. It presents background on disposal, withdrawal, and retention policies. The report concludes with a summary of the Sage West Rebellion, efforts to force divestiture of federal lands, and which is a big failure, with absolutely no backing to it whatsoever, and issues for Congress on disposing or retaining federal lands. Again, folks, I'm not here to tell you what is right and wrong. That's not why we're here. We're only here to read the source. We're only here to tell you how things actually are, not how they should be, not what's right or wrong, that's what's good or evil. These are all concepts from the tree of fruit, from the fig tree of good and evil. Just concepts. They mean absolutely nothing when compared to the terms of art of the law. Don't be confused. This is how it is. Federal land acquisition. Federal land ownership began when the original 13 states ceded title to more than 40% of their western lands, 237 million acres between the Appalachian Mountains and the Mississippi River, to the central government between 1781 and 1802. Federal land acquisition from foreign countries began with the we already covered this in the summary. Spain, Great Britain, through treaties, other substantial acquisitions of 620 million acres via purchases and treaties occurred between 1846 and 1853. Last major North American land acquisition, of course, Alaska, 378 million acres in 1867. At its inception, the federal government did not own land in the original states of the Union. Rather, ownership of lands between the Appalachian Mountains and the Mississippi River was ceded by the original states. An additional, so there you go. I mean, didn't start out this way. This was a voluntary act upon the, by the states. And additional states were formed from those lands. West of the Mississippi River, except Texas, lands were primarily acquired by the U.S. federal government from foreign governments, as was Florida, which was acquired from Spain. The means which by which the federal government came to own its lands can affect which laws govern the lands. Remember, you're the lands. Management. The public domain lands, primarily those obtained from a foreign sovereign, which includes the states, typically are governed by different laws than are lands acquired from states or individuals. Constitutional basis for federal land ownership. Oh, it's unconstitutional for the federal government to own land. Really? Is that a true statement? Well, yes, read what it says. The U.S. Constitution addresses the relationship of the federal government to the lands. Property Clause, Article 4, Section 3, Clause 2, gives Congress authority over the lands, territories, and other property of the United States. It reads that Congress shall have the power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States. This provision provides broad authority for Congress to govern the lands, and we heard from the Supreme Court on the opinion, acquired by the federal government as it sees fit, and to exercise exclusive authority to decide on whether or not to dispose of those lands. Not up to the states. The U.S. Supreme Court has described this power as without limitation, stating that... Oh, come on, computer. Stating, here's what the Supreme Court says. It says, while Congress can acquire exclusive or partial jurisdiction over lands within a state by the state's consent or cession, the presence or absence of such jurisdiction has nothing to do with Congress's power over the property clause. Absent consent or cession, a state undoubtedly retains jurisdiction over federal lands within its territory, but Congress equally surely retains the power to enact legislation respecting those lands pursuant to the property clause, and when Congress so acts, the federal legislation necessarily overrides conflicting state laws under the supremacy clause. Now again, this is where we see that there is actually no competition here, because the states actually still do hold those lands, but they've contracted them. They've, through treaty, given them over in title only to the federal government. So there is they're managing these lands on behalf of the state, not against the state, not in competition with the state, on behalf of the state. One authoritative commentary noted that no appropriation of public lands may be made for any purpose except by authority of Congress. See, Congress ain't going to help you, folks. Congress is the bar. Congress is the barrier to this. Congress could end this at any time. They could cede all the lands back to all the states anytime they wanted to. They're not going to. Congress may limit the disposition of the public domain to the manner consistent with its views of public policy. The property clause, empowers Congress to act as proprietor and legislature over the public domain. Congress has complete power to make those needful rules, which in its discretion it determines are necessary. When Congress acts with respect to those lands covered by the property clause, its legislation overrides conflicting state laws. Absent action by Congress, however, states may in some instances exercise some jurisdiction over activities on federal lands. Thus, it is accepted law that the federal government may own and hold property as Congress directs. Issues such as whether some or all of the remaining federal lands should be retained or divested, how to dispose of lands, or whether to acquire additional federal lands appear to be policy questions for Congress. Now, this is where people are, you know, again, call your congressman. Here, I've got a piece of paper, and if I get thousands of signatures, I can hand it in, and it will be a bill. It will be a petition. I will petition my government. You know, to hear slaves talk like that, it's painful to me. And once you figure this out, once you know your status and you don't doubt it anymore, once you see what the doctrine of master and servant actually means, once you understand what U.S. citizenship is and rights and all these things that we've talked about, if someone comes up to me with a petition, it sets me off. I mean, it pisses me off. When someone tells me to vote, when someone tells me, hey, call your congressman, I mean, keep in mind, I'm the guy that used to go into the, I was the, and We Are Change, we used to go into the Capitol buildings and hand deliver all the evidence for 9/11, or we'd hand deliver some crime that happened to the Attorney General or to his agent. You never actually get to talk. We did talk to the assistant governor, the lieutenant governor, which was cool. And I confronted a bunch of people that are, those videos are still on YouTube, We Are Change Utah. But, oh, and of course, Shurtleff is in jail, which is kind of cool. But, you know, for the most part, you know, calling your congressman, you're going to get a secretary. A secretary, when you look up the word secretary, is actually a secret keeper. That's why you have a secretary of state, secretary of the defense, secretary of this, secretary of that. Secretary means secret keeper. So your calls are going to be intercepted. Your petitions are going to be intercepted. Your letters are going to be intercepted by the secretaries. And for the most part, they're not going to bother your congressman or your senator. They love for you to send them a digital email that can just go in a nice little folder and says, yep, we received a letter. Boop! Makes it a lot easier for them to manage us. So, I mean, the whole thing is just, everything's for show, folks. I really want you to get that. I guess what I'm trying to tell you is they're all crisis actors. Congress is a frickin' group of crisis actors. They're fake. They're not what you think they are. They're just a board on a corporation setting corporate rules for commerce and interstate and international transactions. That's it. Different ways to extort and exact money that's not their due. Different ways to steal your blood, your inheritance, to take away your heirship. That's what they do, folks. The Equal Footing Doctrine, it says, the Equal Footing Doctrine is based on Article 4, Clause 1, Section 3, Clause 1 of the Constitution. That clause addresses how new states will be admitted. The doctrine means that equality of constitutional right and power is the condition of all states of the Union, old and new. It does not mean that physical or economic situations among states must be the same. The term comes from the State Enabling Acts that included the phrase that the state was admitted into the Union on equal footing with the original states. The U.S. Supreme Court has clarified, again, what those rights are. Oh my gosh! No, don't go to the source! No, no! Shock jocks will tell us what we need to know. Well, let's go look on the Supreme Court. Yeah, I know. I'm going there. In the context of land, the Equal Footing Doctrine has been held to mean that the states have the authority over the beds of navigable waterways. Some have argued that the Equal Footing Doctrine prohibits permanent federal land ownership. So here they are addressing the idiots, the idiocracy directly, the Pat Riot. This is contrary to the plain wording of the Constitution. Man, here's the Supreme Court telling you, the Bundys and everybody else who keeps parroting this bullshit, that you're contrary to the very plain wording of the very Constitution you keep invoking with Stockholm Syndrome, you slaves. The doctrine in some language within the U.S. Supreme Court case of Pollard's Leesee versus Hagen have been combined to provide an argument that the federal government held the lands ceded by the original states only temporarily pending their disposal. However, to address your bullshit, the Supreme Court doesn't talk like that. So, however, this theory has been rejected by other Supreme Court cases. Furthermore, in Pollard's Leesee versus Hagen, the Supreme Court ruled on the narrow issue of federal land ownership of submerged lands beneath navigable waters, finding those lands belonged to the state under the Equal Footing Doctrine because the original states had kept ownership of the shores of navigable waters and the soils under them. Federal land disposal. The initial policy of the federal government generally was to transfer ownership of many of the federal lands to private and state hands, to pay Revolutionary War soldiers, to finance the new government, and later to encourage the development of infrastructure and the settlement of the territories. In other words, when we had the Homestead Act and we had the mining rights that were applied and then changed, you know, the United States wanted to go out there and purchase or conquer the nation, the country, the actual land. And so they gave a lot of different types of people, public people, not private people necessarily, the opportunity to do so by giving you lands, temporary lands, homesteads, that sort of thing. And, of course, they wanted all that back. They didn't want to keep homesteads. They didn't want to keep mineral rights around. They want mineral rights. When you have the mineral rights, having land is pointless. If you can't collect your own water... The initial policy of the federal government generally was to transfer ownership of many of the federal lands to private and state hands. Private individuals or private states. They're, you know, state means people, folks. It's private people. To pay Revolutionary War soldiers, we already covered that. In October 1780, even before the Articles of Confederation were ratified, the Continental Congress adopted a general policy for administering any lands transferred to the federal government. So, I mean, this is back from the Continental Congress, folks. The lands were to be disposed of for the common benefit of the United States, were to be settled and formed into distinct Republican states, which shall become members of the federal union, and shall have the same rights of sovereignty, freedom, and independence as the other states. The lands were to be granted and settled at such time and under such regulations as shall hereafter be agreed on by the United States in Congress assembled. So, the questions about the governance of these lands, including potential statehood, were resolved by the Continental Congress in the Northwest Ordinance of 1787, and at nearly the same time, and in nearly the same manner by the Constitutional Convention drafting the new U.S. Constitution. The decision was to have initial administration by federally appointed governor, followed by shared authority between an appointed governor and a representative assembly, culminating in statehood on the equal footing of the original with the original states. So, I mean, you could see that this notion of public lands was actually built into the very foundation and function of the United States. I mean, there's no going against this other than your own personal opinion. Again, what's right or wrong? Well, I'm not here for that. I'm here to give you source. This whole thing is either a psyop or just a bunch of idiots who listen to radio that did a bunch of research and seem to think they know. Everybody's always looking, again, the problem is that people are looking at the laws as if they're there to help them as opposed to control them. Okay, the public law is created to control public people. Private law is private law. Private law is something that's agreed to between private people. The private people created the Compact of the United States, which then is in charge of creating public law and controlling public places. Again, built into the very foundation of this country. To say that that federal land ownership is unconstitutional is probably one of the most ridiculous patriot mythologies I've ever heard. And I would be glad to debate anybody on this. Sure, I mean, bring your attorneys, bring whatever. It's all right here, folks. It's all congressional documents. You can look. Again, let me read, just to take us out of this segment here, let me read some of these, the constitutions. I can go to the very constitutions of the states, and I can see where the enabling acts were carried over. If I can get my program to work here. Okay. I can't. What's going on? Now my computer decides to mess up. Well, I'll go back to the enabling acts, which were carried over into the constitutions of the states. Here's one for New Mexico, territory of New Mexico, to form a constitution and a state government. Act of June 20th, 1910. See, Sam, these are acts. These are congressional acts that are then signed off by the president. That's how a state is thus created, right? I don't know what people think states actually are. They're just corporations formed. So, second, in New Mexico, here he is. This is the second part. That the people inhabiting said proposed state do agree and declare that they forever disclaim all right and title to the unappropriated and ungranted public lands lying within the boundaries thereof, and to all lands lying within said boundaries owned or held by any Indian or Indian tribes, the right or title to which shall have been acquired through or from the United States or any prior sovereignty. Mexico, for instance, and that until the title of such tribes shall have been extinguished, the same shall be and remain subject to the disposition and under the absolute jurisdiction and control of the Congress of the United States, that the lands and other property belonging to citizens of the United States residing without. Does this sound familiar? Does this sound like the same exact contract that the people, the sovereign people of every other frickin' Western state has signed? Sounds very similar, doesn't it? Here's one for, we read Alabama, actually. Here's one, let's see, where are we? Enabling Act. An act to enable the people of Colorado to form a constitution and state government, and for the admission of the said state into the Union on an equal footing with the original states. What is this? What is a state? It's an act of Congress. Penned and approved by the president. That's all it is. Oh, what is Colorado's enabling portion? Let's see. Boundaries. That said state of Colorado shall consist of this territory, etc. And where is it? Sorry. Well, that one's not easy to find, but it's in there. Oh, there it is. The people... Oh, no, that's not it. I apologize. It's there. I'm going to move on because I can't find it very easily. An Enabling Act and Election Laws. Laws governing elections in Oklahoma. An act... Well, shoot, I'm running up dry here at the end. I'm sorry. Utah's Road to Statehood says that, second, that the people inhabiting said proposed state do agree and declare that they forever disclaim all right and title to the unappropriated public lands lying within the boundaries thereof and to all lands lying within said limits, etc., etc., etc. So, again, the same exact wording. Every state was created basically the same way. Folks, I don't know what to tell you, man. It's a scam. It's a private group of people forming a corporation to control the rest of the people, the laborers, or what we call human capital. What do you think capitalism is, man? Capital means head. How do you count cattle? How do you count the movable portions of the land, the cattle, the chattel, the people, the human animals, the soulless beasts of burden that we call the public citizenship, the human capital management, right? I mean, come on, folks, think about this. Where is all your patriotism coming from? Where is all this worship of false gods coming from? Why do you claim the founding fathers as anything but the creators of a corporation? For commercial purposes. What is it about this thing? What does the Bible say? It's very simple. It's how I start out my book, and it's the key to knowledge. What does the Bible say? It says, take no gods before me, meaning don't do anything but what's real, what's natural. Don't take false deity. Don't take false idols. What does the Bible say? Very clear. It says, all of the gods of the nations are idols. What does God mean? Archon, rulers, princes, presidents, judges. starting to get it. Thanks, folks. On your wish list, that's retarded babble. Protesters make the Hitler as soon as they start to rabble. Fear nothing but fishes in the barrel. It doesn't have to be Christmas for a carol. Some decorate with ornamental decorum. Some perform shock and awe on Hanukkah and Purim. That's where my job come in. I am a blessing to the mercenaries.